I'm Annika Stokes and welcome to Strategy Bites. I am the co-founder of Oaktree Talent Group, a specialist strategy and transformation recruitment agency. Strategy Bites is a compilation of career stories and insights from the market's most experienced executives. Many have gained their strategy toolkit from management consulting. In each episode, we ask the best of the industry's talent to share the highs and lows of their careers and the best bits of advice they've ever been given. They will give us a glimpse of what their day-to-day lives look like now, warts and all. Our aim is to give inspiration to the ambitious strategists out there and give them an understanding of what is possible. In each episode, we will ask guests for a read, watch, or listen to recommendation and a quote or value that they live their lives by. So my final guest for season four of the Strategy Bites podcast is someone I've known for a very long time now, and she currently has a dual career. So Maylise is not only a contract strategy consultant, she is also a holistic breathwork coach and yogi. So welcome, Maylise, to the Strategy Bites podcast. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Annika.
So Maylise, the reason I was so keen to get you on the podcast is because we are trying to show our community all the different options that one can have for their careers beyond management consulting. And you are someone who's gone from top tier strategy consulting into strategy corporate roles and then into strategy contracting. So you've seen many different paths and have now designed a lifestyle that really suits you and one that I think is absolutely fabulous. And since we've just launched Future State Consulting, which is our interim management consulting division, we're hearing from lots of curious consultants as to what that path could look like. So I thought I'd get an expert on. Yeah. So with all that being said, it'd be really good to get a bit of an overview of your background in your words.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm originally French and I've spent about 3 years working in a consulting firm in France and been about 9 years now in Australia. So as you said, I've worked in ASX listed companies for about 6 years and recently got into freelance consulting. And then when I'm not doing that, I also have my own business. I'm really passionate about transformational and healing work. So I do holistic retreats, including yoga, breathwork, all sorts of spiritual practices, and also support with coaching to support integration. So very two-sided lives.
You've definitely designed an ideal life for you, that's for sure. So jumping right back to the start, where did your career start and what plan did you have for your life back then?
Yeah, so I don't think there was any time where there was like a really set plan. When I was in business school, I've always felt drawn to spending as much time overseas as I could. So I did my first internship in Berlin. All the opportunities that I had to spend overseas, I kind of took. And after an experience in an internship in private equity, I also did one in management consulting. That's kind of how it kind of led me initially to that path. But yeah, just staying as general as I could, because there was not really a strong sense of where I would actually end up.
I find that with many people just fall into consulting. It sounds exciting and you don't have to actually choose a specific career path really at that point. So it was really the broadness of management consulting that attracted you to it and the types of projects?
Yeah. So I guess, definitely knowing that I could kind of stay a generalist. I think also it's known that it's kind of this good school where you're learning a lot of skills that are going to be really transferable, with any type of role that you might want to take on afterwards. And I think it was just a good opportunity to drop a bit of a hand in a couple of different industries and get a better sense around where I would kind of commit in terms of the type of corporate, big, smaller, what would I do, etc. So that was kind of, I think, the main initial intention. And also, we always say usually in consulting that also this kind of opportunity to travel a bit around. And that was also definitely a draw for me at that time.
Definitely a draw when you're younger, but maybe not so much when you're getting on a bit.
Yeah, so sure.
But Roland Berger was who you worked for, and obviously they're not as well known in Australia. They don't operate as much here, but certainly we've had past guests like Sophie Hayek on the podcast who also came from Roland Berger, and they're known as a top tier consulting internationally, and maybe more the entrepreneurial creative types from what I hear.
what types of projects got you excited? What was your experience at Roland Berger like?
Yeah, so I was part of two practices, so private equity and consumer goods and retail, and definitely had a preference for consumer goods retail for the, you know, the type of projects, less intensity, I guess, and always loved longer projects that involved a bit more of collaboration with the client rather than just being this fully kind of outside in view. So yeah, so that kind of was, yeah, more the operational strategy work was definitely something that I was more interested in. And I think also just the odd projects where you would be dropped into industries that you wouldn't know nothing about and, you know, just within a few weeks then become an expert. Like, it's always interesting to kind of broaden your perspective and knowledge. So that's where the private equity sometimes could actually be quite interesting. Just have, yeah, exposure to industries that you would just never really know. But I've always been more, yeah, keen on operational strategy work rather than like very blue sky type of work.
Obviously, you then decided to leave consulting and move into corporate, but you also decided to move to Australia from France. What was the sort of thought process back then? Why Australia?
So I actually had come to Australia, I think it was in 2010. So when I was still in business school, I kind of came here solo with the typical, you know, working holiday visa to work a little bit and also travel for a few months. And I just fell in love with the country. And so it kind of like was sitting in the back of my mind. And as I was within Roland Berger, I think there was a little bit of that sense that life was passing me by at some point. Like the first couple of years, you know what you're in for and it's hard work, but, you know, it's also, there was also an awesome culture and I really enjoyed my time there. But I could also felt a little bit stuck in the loop of more, 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 you know, this kind of very high achiever mindset where just want to get promoted sooner and, you know, have the strongest relationship with partners to have more choice in the staffing. And I was kind of feeling I was, yeah, a little bit too stuck in those dynamics. And I just, yeah, had this urge at some point to just make a shift and have a life change, I guess. And someone that I was working with in Roland Berger had actually moved to Australia a couple of months before and working in the strategy team of a big retailer. And they were recruiting a lot at that time. And because of my experience in the consumer goods and retail practice, like for me it was the ideal job. And so it felt like basically things really aligned at some point. So I kind of took on the opportunity to apply and it kind of all flew from there. So yeah.
So you actually had someone who'd already done the move. So was it slightly easier knowing someone from Roland Berger had already done that transition to Australia? You sort of almost had a friend here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also just the fact that I knew that I came already with a working visa, it's easier to do that move when you already have a job and a visa attached to it. Like the risk is a lot lower than just moving without anything. For me at that time, that definitely provided security for sure.
So how was it adapting to working in Australia versus working in Europe?
I think it wasn't really a hard transition. Like there's just so many things in the Australian culture that make it, you know, very easygoing. And I find the work culture, yeah, more easygoing, friendlier, like less hierarchical than it would be from my personal experience in France. So I think from that perspective, yeah, I guess it was only more upside than anything. So I don't remember, like it was a while ago, but I don't remember feeling like, yeah, like a really difficulty to adapt, because I think the level of standards in some ways that were, yeah, like less positive in some way from what I knew in Europe rather than here.
Yeah. And I think these corporate teams in some of these big ASXs are actually quite international, especially in strategy.
Yeah.
So you probably had quite a few colleagues that had already done the work expats.
Definitely. And I think, yeah, that's very true, especially when I first arrived in the strategy team in the retailer, like there was about 20 or 25 of us. It was very much run as an internal strategy consulting firm at the time. So it felt like a bit of a transition of having those processes and those colleagues that definitely were very similar to, you know, what I was used to, as well as being more embedded in the business and kind of learning the ways of the Australian culture. So yeah, it was definitely a smooth transition from that perspective as well.
A bit more of a soft landing when it feels a bit more like consulting, and obviously everyone's international anyway. And then obviously you then did 3 years in the retailer and then moved into a major airline and did just under 4 years. How did you find working in two of the most iconic ASX businesses?
So I was actually in different types of divisions when I first worked in the retailer, and I felt like I split my time between two different divisions, and both of them had a very different culture as well. So it's just always interesting to see subcultures within bigger companies. But yeah, like I was saying, I think my first role, the strategy team then, was really all about supporting the business in a big transformation plan. So that really taught me a lot about, you know, really working super collaboratively and actually getting things done rather than just beautiful PowerPoint slides. Really leading a big, large scale program. I found that my experience in the second business, yeah, was just really, really different. So it's just a way that you can't really ever assume how much, yeah, like subcultures there is, I think, within organizations. And it will be really similar in the airline space, where I actually was working for the loyalty program rather than the airline itself. And even that, I think, yeah, had two different cultures within that business. And the business went through a whole agile and digital transformation. So even for me, like, it was a whole new, learning in terms of roles around, you know, stepping more into the digital product space and having a lot more accountability rather than pure strategy roles, which is actually always what I've also been wanting to, like the direction that I have been willing to give into my career. But I feel like also cultures, I don't know whether you'd agree, but like really evolve over time in organizations based on circumstances and the leaders themselves. So yeah, it's not something that is ever fixed anyway.
Oh, totally. It's really interesting when people or candidates go, oh, what's that, the culture of that organization? Like, so you can't really say the whole organization has this X culture.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating about subcultures even within business units. So it does definitely come down to who you're working for, I feel.
100%. Yeah.
Mm. So obviously you had some great opportunities within these two businesses. Was it really obvious for you what needed to be done in order to climb the ladder in these businesses?
It was, but I guess then I think there's always this potential discrepancy sometimes when you're in corporate, when the opportunity also need to present themselves. It can be dependent on, you know, people moving. And so it's sometimes not just because you're ready that you're going to get what you want and you know what you need to do. Like, they both do a bit of, not musical chair, but yeah, there's always a timing play in some ways. And for me, when I left the airline company, it was actually right in the middle of COVID. And that's when, you know, I had aspirations of actually moving from the loyalty to the airline space, because that's kind of where I wanted to explore a little bit more. But then, yeah, considering the circumstances with COVID, like, there was just not going to be a lot of opportunity for me. So I think definitely some clarity, but then whether timings are going to align both internally and also with external circumstances, that is another story.
Mm. So life beyond corporate role. So what attracted you to contracting? What was your sort of main motivation back then?
Interestingly, I don't think it was ever a really conscious choice. Like, I actually didn't know anyone around me that was contracting. And it kind of happened a little bit organically. I was kind of at the time in a company where I just knew I wasn't going to stay. And I was looking for my next move and opportunity. I was actually considering then moving into like HR business partner role or leadership development sort of work. But yeah, all of those ideas were just not fully formed. And so I resigned from the company, just assuming that I was going to give myself a few months to have a think about what's next. And I had plans to host a lot of retreats, et cetera. And then first lockdown, I think, happened. And so that kind of put away all the plans that I had. And that company I had just resigned actually came back and said, hey, we have actually a project that we think you'd be interested in. It's all about leadership development. Would you be interested in coming back as a as a contractor to do that for a couple of weeks. So I said, yeah, why not? And so that's kind of how it all started. I think I always had initially in the back of my mind that that would be cool, but, you know, not sure about ability to find contracts and to support myself financially because I'm fully independent. So, you know, of course, money is a big question around security and stability and all these things. But yeah, it kind of happened organically without me choosing it. So it kind of gave me a taster before I actually made the conscious choice, if that made sense.
Mm. And you said you were thinking before COVID hit, you were planning retreats. So you were already on the holistic path as well, teaching?
Yeah. It had already been a few years where I was already doing that alongside my corporate jobs. Yeah.
So did that play into your thinking at all in terms of wanting to do more of that?
Yes. But I guess, you know, I was kind of not ready to fully back myself at that stage, you know. So I think I just knew I needed more space. I knew that, you know, I guess in terms of thinking about what was going to be next, there was not anything clear. And so I kind of knew that it was not going to happen if I just kept on working a permanent role because there's never ever space to experiment and try things or sit and meet people and have conversations. Like I was finding it hard to juggle everything. So that's why I said, like, I'm just going to press pause and then see what the options might look like. And yeah, that might mean that I could invest a bit more time in my personal business, but I wasn't fully ready for that just yet. So that would have been a secondary driver, I would say.
And just so the audience know, the holistic practice that you do, what types of retreats or what is it that you actually practice?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different things. I'm a certified yoga instructor and also breathwork practitioner. So breathwork is a big umbrella term. So it's actually two different branches. There's what people might know as from yoga as pranayama, where there's all those kind of specific breathing patterns that you can use to regulate your nervous system and influence your brain body state. And it's all about, you know, shifting mood and stronger focus and improving sleep and all these things. So that's one. And I also host what's called more like breathwork journey and ceremonies. So that's more getting access to subconscious mind. It's really deep healing work. So that's something that I'm very passionate about that I create a lot of spaces for. So yeah, yoga, breathwork, and then also just a lot of other energetic tools and earth-based practices. So I either do them myself or collaborate with other practitioners over weekends or longer periods of time to have really a container to hold people and also just facilitate events throughout the week in Sydney as well. Yeah.
Amazing. And one of the biggest complaints we get from management consultants is to do with work-life balance. And we've seen many on the verge of complete burnout. So I guess an injection of yoga and breathwork actually could help many consultants. Sure. I mean, what got you into this practice?
So when I arrived in Australia, I just started to have a very regular yoga practice. And I think also in some ways, like I just felt that move was a big opportunity for me to rediscover who I am in some ways. Like I went on a big self-discovery journey throughout all these years. And I consider myself being a seeker and like an eternal student of life in some ways. And so every time I feel called to something, I just try it. And if I like it, I usually learn how to facilitate it. Like I love to be able to then share it more broadly. So it's just been an organic journey for me over the last 9 years since I've arrived here. I think I did my first teacher training 7 years ago. And then since I've always been committed to sharing and holding space for people. And I've always introduced that back in every organization that I was with, you know, being super involved in all the wellness initiatives. I've always been holding well-being events and classes in all the environments I've been in. I'm just so passionate about culture and professional well-being and personal well-being. So I've always strived to infuse that as active practices, but also as embodying that myself as a professional as well, you know, to kind of have a little ripple impact as much as I can in organizations that I'm in.
The fact that you've fallen into contracting, did you find that that actually was a great way to satisfy both careers, your strategy career and then your holistic career?
Yes, 100%. And I think this is why actually from, you know, initially just dipping a toe a little bit, not by synchronistically, I guess, by chance. That's why I've just been really committed to that rhythm, and that way of working for me works really well, because I just find that I have, yeah, so much more freedom to create, like you were saying initially, like the life that I want, and prioritize like things that I really want to do in my life between, you know, my own learning, the times I'm holding space, and also, you know, working so I can support myself and kind of enable all of that work with contracting. So for me, it's so ideal. I love it.
So great. So what are some of the projects that you've worked on look like? What type of contracts, what type of organizations, what length?
Yeah. So I mentioned like the initial one was just a couple of weeks. And then I worked for a big home improvement retailer. And that was very much of a strategy planning kind of project. It was initially for 3 months and then got extended further. And then I got like a few more projects at Idaho projects following on from that that came through. And I also supported boutique consultancy on and off for about 6 months. And so, you know, that was, yeah, both on growth strategy work, more due diligence kind of work as well. So that was mainly last year. And then this year, I've actually just been working with one client, an airline as well. And so this one has been going on for 9 months. So it's actually been quite a long assignment. Mainly it's been consumer-focused organization and between, yeah, a bit of due diligence and more strategic planning work. Yeah.
Mm. And do you schedule in the breaks for your other stuff? How does that work?
Yeah. So last year I actually had planned all my other work and then fit the consulting in between. So I think I worked for 3 months and then I had a 2 month break. I went to Europe because it was post-COVID. So I went back to see my family for an extended period of time. And then I was actually teaching some yoga trainings 2 weeks and then like two modules of 2 weeks that were a few weeks apart. So that was kind of my must for the year. And then I actually managed to fill the gaps, almost all the gaps, with consulting work, which I was so surprised by. But it kind of landed in this way. The thing is, it meant that I spent a lot of time, you know, kind of traveling around. And then it was like a lot of energetically, like, you know, a lot of mental switching. But that was the most important thing for me at that point in time, was to make sure I was, yeah, like, you know, showing up for all those personal projects that I had. But this year I made a different choice. Like I experimented more with, I felt like I wanted to be more rooted. So I signed a contract that was, you know, 6 months long. And then I had planned a 6 weeks break to Europe this summer. So I've done that and then went back to that company for a couple more weeks after that. And then I'm always taking usually December, January off, because I know around Christmas in January is pretty dead anyway. And then, yeah, I think honestly things are very fluid, like, but definitely prioritizing those breaks and this time for me to kind of do the rest in between.
You've had to get comfortable with a bit of ambiguity.
100%.
Yeah. But do you feel that contracting has enabled you to continue to learn in your career and grow? I mean, some may worry it might stunt their learning.
I guess it just depends what's stage you're at. Like I personally, I don't necessarily think that I, in terms of where I'm sitting in my kind of professional skills and stakeholder engagement capacities and all these things, like I don't think things have evolved a lot more to where I was 2 years ago, but it's also the conscious decisions that I've made around the types of projects that I've said yes to. And to me, I've probably also accepted sometimes, you know, projects that are more into like my sweet spot, because I know it's going to be lower mental, because I also know that I want to put my energy into other things on the side as well. So it kind of, I think, also depends where you're positioning yourself. Like I feel there's definitely opportunity to continue to grow. And it just really depends how you're showing up in the assignments and your types of projects that you're also taking on. And that's definitely not to say that I haven't had a lot of opportunity as well come up for me with permanent roles in those companies. It's almost every time, like there's always, you know, some things that pop up alongside. So I feel like if I wanted to prioritize then my career again in like step changes, it definitely would have been an option. It's just not where my head is at right now. So yeah.
I was going to say, I'm assuming that many of these organizations, if you're doing good work, would then want to keep you on a permanent basis. So it could be a bit of a try before you buy for some, if that's the way they wanted to look at it.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of the types of contracts that people could take on, I mean, I'm assuming that it could also enable someone to broaden their sector experience if they are quite siloed in their sector experience to date. Sure. Do you feel that clients that are hiring contractors are a little bit more flexible in terms of the actual sector experience and they're just really focused on the key skill set?
I mean, it happens that most of the contracts that I've taken on are actually very related to my past experience. It's a bit hard for me to answer that. But then I would say, at least looking at some other consultants that have been in those teams, some definitely didn't have necessarily that industry experience that was relevant. So I would definitely say so. Yeah.
People obviously decide to move into the interim consulting space for many different reasons, and it definitely will suit some and definitely won't suit others. Yeah. What piece of advice would you give to consultants or ex-consultants that are thinking about stepping into the contracting space?
There's a saying that I love, that you can't think your way into right action. You have to act your way into right thinking. So, you know, sometimes they just get stuck into those mental loops of what if I do it, what are the pros, the cons, et cetera. But I really think that trying things as an experiment is really the best way. Like everything is always reversible and you can always make a different choice if you realize that it doesn't work. I've had a lot of those experiences in my own professional life where then I would realize that actually something doesn't fit and then taking another direction. And I guess if there's any concerns around what's the worst that can happen, and if you're worried about the lack of financial stability, for example, or, you know, ability to kind of find contracts that all are going to be able to kind of support you, I think it's, yeah, perhaps getting comfortable with a little lump sum of money as savings to kind of know that you have something to kind of fall back on. But yeah, just giving yourself the opportunity to try and just see, because I think it's hard to really trust and know that you can back yourself in the ability to always find another contract until you actually get in it. Like it was definitely a fear of mine. And now actually I fully realize that, you know, things are just coming. When the next thing is ready, it's coming. But until you've experienced that personally, the mind is struggling to really trust that. So you can always go back to consulting. I feel like consultants are highly employable anyway. And then, yeah, just try.
Okay, true. And certainly the pushback we get from consultants that are, you know, like you said, worried about long gaps in between projects and the financial impact that that could have. In theory, if you were to decide, I'm going to work on contract for, you know, 365, well, obviously, well, not all 100% of the time, but certainly most of the time, full year round, would you be better off financially?
If I was working
for the whole year contracting, do you think you'd be better off financial than you would in a permanent role?
Okay. Yes, like I think last year I only worked for 6 or 7 months max, and I was probably at least on par with a permanent role salary. Like I think that's just such a big gap with, you know, like the day rate actually include the fact that you're not going to work for 365 days. So I think that's also what, you know, it's important to kind of get comfortable with. But I think also I've actually had this discussion a few times with consultants, a freelance consultant as well. It's, you know, I think at some point also you can always just want more and more money, and I get a little bit stuck in that as well. But I think it's not thinking about the opportunity cost of not working, but just knowing how much you actually need to support yourself and to do the things that really interest you and excite you. And then, yeah, just kind of stay with that, because of course you could always work more and get more money, but is it really what's most important to you when you choose that lifestyle? Yeah, it might differ for some people at some point in time when they're, you know, saving for a deposit for a house or whatever. Like, we all have different circumstances, but it's just about that.
For some, it's flexibility. For some, it might be money. Others, it could be that they want to do a startup on the side and still have some income. You know, it could be various different reasons.
Yeah.
But the feedback we're getting, obviously, exploring this market more and more from the clients that we have that are have used consulting contractors in the past, is that there's some very good ones out there and there's some very average ones out there. But the good ones, from what I can see, they're in constant demand. And I'm sure you've worked alongside some excellent contractors and also some average contractors. So what is it that you think that makes a good contract consultant?
So, I mean, I think that's just generally something that it's contract or not contract consultant, but I think it's more just having this really strong work ethic. Because even if you're not permanent, just, you know, caring about doing good work and having a positive impact when you're in the organization, I think is really a mindset that makes a really big difference. Because then, of course, it also drives like the level of accountability and reliability that someone might have. So I think that's a big foundation. And I'd say that the second one is what I would call like the level of collaboration. So I really see a difference between consultants that have been used to working in corporate as well, and that just have this natural mindset of really being more embedded in the business and co-creating a lot more, rather than some other consultants that might be more only having been exposed to consulting firm and then potentially are more used to doing more work like in the outside, I guess. And so I feel like, this like ability to collaborate and co-create and really kind of feel like you're being part of the organization, the team while you're there, just makes a really big difference.
Mm. So do you ever consider going back to permanent work, or does this lifestyle suit you for now?
I think, you know, for the right role, like at some stage, I might definitely still consider it. Like, I feel like it's probably life stage dependent. Like right now for me, it definitely is what's working. So I still want to stay contracting. But yeah, I'm not saying that in a couple of years, you know, if I have a family and something like that, things might change. I'm not sure. But I guess, you know, one thing that sometimes I do miss a bit is just feeling like you have like this stronger sense of belonging when you're part of an organization, and just feel like, you can be more involved in workplace culture and inspiring others and, you know, leading by examples and all these things that is a bit harder to do, I would say, as an external consultant. So I think that might be one of the draws that at some point I would be interested in kind of going back in, but definitely not right now.
And obviously, given you've worked for top-tier consulting firm, a couple of major corporates in strategy or strategic roles, and now in contracting, what do you think are the major sort of pros and cons of each?
I would say in consulting, like, definitely strong ability, like in terms of learning curve, like how quick you learn. I think that's definitely probably the highest that you can get. I think also even just the level of investment in learning and development that you can have, I think that's definitely a strong positive. Obviously, in terms of negative, the work-life balance, like the level of pressure that you experience is probably the most intense. And for me as well, I felt like the level of impact that you're having, like you just never really see the results of what you're working on. That would be consulting. I think in the corporate space, in terms of pros, slower pace, I feel also that for ex-consultants, there's really good career pathways. Like I've always felt like there was always really good opportunities kind of coming up. And the biggest one for me, obviously, is the level of impact as well that you can have. So, in terms of team leadership, around driving projects end to end, seeing them come to life, it's just nothing closer to that. In terms of the cons in corporate space, I feel like perhaps the level of, this might be a slower trajectory, obviously, than in consulting in terms of your growth, maybe. And sometimes also a bit of like the politics, depending on where you are. And investment in learning and development. I always come back to that because to me it was really important. And I just know that it's always something that was a little bit hard to fight for sometimes. And then in terms of contracting, well, biggest pro, obviously, the level of freedom. Like, you just can choose what to work on, when to work, and the financials as well. Like, it's really good. I think, as I mentioned before in the conversation, like, in terms of the potential cons, the sense of belonging, if that's important to you, and just feeling like you're part of a team. Depending on the cultures in the organization, like, it can depend on the projects as well. And also, similarly to the consulting, you know, the level of impact that you have, same. It depends on the project, I guess, but naturally you would just, it's less likely that you fully have responsibility for delivering a project end to end, create a product or own a P&L. So if that level of impact is really important, it's a little bit harder in the contracting world for sure.
Well, hopefully that's helped some clarify what path they want to take.
Yeah.
But Mel, it's all our guests on this podcast, we ask for a read, watch, or listen to recommendation for others. And it can be a business or non-business related book, TED Talk, podcast, but something you think the audience would benefit from. What can you point to?
There's a podcast show that I love. It's my absolute favorite. It's called The One You Feed. And there's a lot of episodes because it's been going on for years and years. But it's basically all about taking a conscious, consistent, and creative effort to make a life worth living. So they're inviting guests from the spiritual world, psychology, like neuroscience. It's really, really broad to give really different lenses and very tangible lenses around how to live the life that you want, I guess. And there's a few episodes in particular that have really resonated with me. There's one from Mark Nepo that's called Connecting on What Matters that I really love. Mark Nepo is a poet. There's a few from a psychologist also named Rick Hansen that are really good, that, all about, positive psychology, neuroscience. So there's a lot of facts behind as well as really tangible and pragmatic tools. And the last one I would call out is Tara Brach. She's a Buddhist teacher, and her interview is also really good. So definitely my favorite podcast.
Great. Well, I'll get that put in the footnotes for you. And are there any final words of wisdom for up and coming management consultants unsure of what path to take?
I guess I'd say, like, follow your pings, like what really lights you up. I think we can design the life that we want, and just following those intuitions and what, if there's an itch needing scratching, just go for it. And then you can just always change courses and take another step if it wasn't right. Like, we just have one life, and I think it's just worth making the choices that really light us up. So,
And it's fantastic that you've done that. Very much a test and learn approach, but certainly it's worked for you. And Melis, obviously there is going to be some stressed out consultants out there curious about your retreats or your breathwork classes or other things that you're involved with. Where can they find you?
So I have a website. So it's my name, melisburisto.com, where I post my events and share a bit more about all the practices that I offer one-on-one. And also my Instagram page as well, where I usually post the events and things coming up. Yeah.
Amazing. And again, we'll put those in the footnotes of the podcast episode. But thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. I hope this has given many food for thought, and there's many different paths you can take. And I think the message is you can always go back if you make a wrong move.
100%. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melis. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strategy Bites podcast, bringing strategy career advice to the market. But please do remember that first and foremost, Oaktree Talent is a specialist strategy and transformation recruitment agency. So if you're a top tier consultant or want to hire excellent strategy capability, please get in touch.